Hey, this is Nasty Neil here at the Station of Decapitation Without Your Head. And a big thank you for checking out Without Your Head here on Podomatic. But please subscribe to us on the iTunes or Google Play off our official website, withoutyourhead.com. That is where all the complete podcasts will be. Over here at Podomatic, you'll hear a shorter version of the weekly show, but over on withoutyourhead.com, you will get the full version. Also, live every Thursday night, come out and listen to us live and join the Facebook group and chat along with the live show. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe on YouTube, all that good stuff. Now, stay tuned for Without Your Head.
Hi, this is Kane Hodder, Victor Crowley, Jason from Friday the 13th. You're listening to withoutyourhead.com.
Of Decapitation Without Your Head. I'm Nasty Neil, and I'm joined by Harrison Smith, the director and writer of the highly anticipated Death House. How you doing?
Thanks for having me on, Neil.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, it's highly anticipated, and I would think that's kind of a double-edged sword. It's like people are looking forward to it, but at the same time, you'd be kind of nervous because you don't want to let them down.
Well, I can tell you this. Look, you can make the greatest movie in the world. You'll always have people who will hate it. We made a great film. We made a solid quality motion picture, and I'm very proud of them. I'm very proud of all the performances. So I know we didn't make anything bad. I mean, it's no Trailer Park Shark, but you know what I'm saying.
Before we go back to Death House, what do you think of this fascination with shark movies and putting them elsewhere than the water?
I don't know. I think I'm going to say it reminds me of the zombie movie, and that is people do them because I think they're pretty easy unless you're going to make a really high quality, good one. But otherwise, just taking a shark, whether you're throwing it in a lake or in a tornado or whatever you're going to do, I don't know. I mean, I it's making money. Somebody's watching it, right?
Yeah, that's very, very true.
Right. Yeah. And if it gives somebody a good time, then I guess, you know, whatever. I know that I'm friends with the director of the Sharknado films, Anthony Ferrante. And I got to say, I mean, and I mean it sincerely, I think Anthony's one of the hardest working freaking guys in show business. And he's talented. And most of all, he knows how to squeeze a dollar out of a dime, man, for production values. So, you know, I just think it's not – I would love to make a great shark movie, but in my opinion, the definitive one was done, Jaws. I don't think there's really anything left to say, like what Anthony's doing, put him in space and throw him in tornadoes.
Yeah. Hey, Anthony, former guest on the show, and I think it was just his birthday recently.
But, yeah, yeah.
And I agree about I always say this on the show, it's like you're never going to be better than Jaws, and it's no shark movie really lives up to that.
Right.
And I'm very close to where Jaws was filmed. I'm on the Cape. So.
Well, it's funny. Speaking of which, I'll give a shout out. I don't know if you've noticed on Twitter, but there's this whole community of people that have adopted the characters from Jaws, and they tweet as the characters. And
I did not know
they've been kind enough to allow me in, and I've kind of joined up. They have me making this like documentary on Amity. And we've discovered through the interview that from Grace Kinney, if you remember from Jaws 2, she was a character that was mentioned but never seen. Mm-hmm. She gave a history of the island where Hendrix is the son of Quint, and it goes on. Now, Amity is about to go to war with Cape Cod. Because it's just, it goes on and on.
I'll be preparing for this war because... I'm on the Cape.
Take a look.
Moment.
Just take a look on Twitter. Like there's like Len Peterson. There's Select Woman Taff. There's Chief Brody. He's known as @RealChiefBrody.
Uh-huh.
Lenny Hendricks. I mean, and then all these obscure characters like Ben Gardner's boat, Pippet's stick. There's Pippet's owner, and then we have Hoagie and Calvin Bouchard. They're on there, and then Dr. K. Morgan from Jaws 3D. Mike Brody. I mean, they're all there. Harry Meadows. Uh-huh.
So it goes beyond even just the original. You're incorporating all the movies.
All four films are incorporated. And the guy who tweets is Hoagie, Michael Caine's character.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can just hear Michael Caine's voice. That's the funny part. Like, he's just this randy old salt that's constantly throwing pictures at Mike Brody of him tonguing his mom, you know? And it's like... So it's funny stuff. And Calvin Bouchard's funny. He just calls everybody nephew all the time. He's great, too.
That's awesome. So Death House, I think most people know Gunnar Hansen was originally writing it. So
correct.
How did you get involved?
Well, I got involved way back during a screening of Zombie Killers in L.A. Mike Eisenstadt, Gunnar's agent, introduced me to Rick Finkelstein and Stephen Chase of Entertainment Factory. And they said, oh, they have this movie. I'd like you to hear their pitch. So the next day at lunch, I went to lunch with Michael, and Michael pitched me this film. He said, look, it's going to be like this large collection of horror stars all in a single film. And he said, I call it The Expendables of Horror. And when he said that, my first reaction was, well, I don't know if I'm interested in something like that. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, it sounds like, you know, a William Castle movie. It sounds like, you know, a cheap gimmick. And I don't want to do that. And so I said, plus The Expendables of Horror kind of makes you think a different thing. Like in The Expendables themselves, you know, Stallone and everybody else, they didn't, like, you know, Bruce Willis, they didn't play their characters they're known for. Like there wasn't Rambo teamed up with, you know, John McClane and all that stuff. However, there was this kind of thought process by a lot of fans that this was going to be a kind of like Freddy versus Jason type of monster mashup, you know, Michael Myers versus Pinhead or Candyman. Mm-hmm. And that's, in my opinion, that's just stupid. And number two, I didn't want to make something like that. But then it turned out that wasn't the case. I read two scripts, the original one by Gunnar, and then they had some guy come in and write a second one, but that one was, it went in a whole different direction and basically made it torture porn. And then I came up with the idea with Gunnar. I sat down and Gunnar said, look, there are certain elements I need to stay. One of them is the concept of what he called the Four Horsemen. And they are these supernatural beings. And so I turned them into what are known as the Five Evils, and I added a woman to the four. So that way we have a female in there as well. Mm-hmm. And then I came up with the idea of it being kind of like this giant prison, this subterranean prison where the world's worst are held, and made it along that line. And basically what inspired me was I was sitting in a bar writing this treatment when the preview for Jurassic World came on. Like it was during Super Bowl, like they're teasing you with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hit me. Jurassic Park without the dinosaurs. That's what we want. And if you watch the Death House trailer, it's very much modeled on the Jurassic Park trailer.
Mm-hmm. I would assume that the actors involved were happy to know they wouldn't be playing the characters that they were known for, or like you know, facsimiles of those characters.
Yeah, they were. Well, number one, they were relieved, but number two, the cost in that would just be incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, it took how many years to make Freddy versus Jason and how many scripts, and look what we got, you know? Yeah. And the money and the legal end of things, I mean, you know, the rights just on who owns Jason Voorhees alone is ridiculous. So it was never going to be that. Mm-hmm. And these people, like Tony Todd was just saying at a recent convention I was at with him, that he said they offered him big money to do a Candyman versus Leprechaun. And it was like, that just defines, man, again, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Man, of all the characters to put up versus Candyman.
Yeah, yeah. It's just really dumb. And, you know, it'd be like, you know, taking Michael Myers and putting him up against Jack Torrance from The Shining. And, yeah, you could do it. But it's stupid, you know? It really is. It's just dumb.
Yeah. Was everyone on board? Was everyone, good with the idea, with the movie?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, a lot of people were already on board when I came to the project. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing was is, you know, nobody knew that Gunner was dying.
Yeah.
And Gunner was such a gentleman and such a big, gentle giant. He never let on. And of course, with hindsight being 2020, you look back and you go, with the questions that he was asking, now you go, oh, well, now I know why he was. I mean, he knew he was dying. Mm-hmm. So he was very concerned about timetables and schedules. You know, he died begging to make sure that this movie got made. He was able to sign off on my revise, you know, on the script. And I got his blessing on that. And I feel good. I mean, we worked a lot on the phone. We met a couple times in person to go over things. Everybody else that was on board pretty much fulfilled it. Everybody says, well, why isn't Robert Englund in it? And the thing is Robert was asked. Robert, when the money moved, Robert was in the middle of three different commitments. And he was home in the United States for a window of like 72 hours. So while Robert had agreed to be in it, the problem is when the money moved, it didn't accommodate Robert's schedule. Mm-hmm. So we'll hopefully get Robert in a sequel. Mm-hmm. He was very nice, very generous, and, you know, real nice guy, but it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. Bruce Campbell, same thing. We approached Bruce Campbell, but he was smack dab in the middle of Ash versus the Evil Dead. Mm-hmm. So he's not coming, you know, but he was real nice. And he said, look, let's get you guys set up with my film festival. He wanted a Death House to open the Bruce Campbell Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
So that was a real nice, it was a real nice token on his behalf, and he was a very nice man about it. And, you know, again, answer is, hey, just catch me again, you know, like, because the money just moved quickly. Suddenly, it was like, okay, we're financed, we gotta go.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean when you have a huge ensemble of characters that they're all gonna be ready to go.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a sequel there. So do you have sequel planned or sequels planned? And in
we
a way,
have five
not...
we have five sequels planned.
Oh, nice. Are they all written? Yep. Or?
Death House 2 is written, yes. The others are kind of formed, like they're fleshed out, but Death House 2 is written.
Mm-hmm. Now, has the movie's played at some festivals, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a nominee right now in both Burbank and Senflow for Best Picture. And we did a private sneak screening up at Scaricon in June. And it was a 250-person audience. Mm-hmm. And the response was overwhelming.
Yeah. I would think that the movie would play especially well at a festival or a convention with so many horror fans.
Absolutely. And that's what Gunner wanted. Gunner wanted to make sure, for example, one of his last wishes was that the trailer, when the trailer is ready, that we debut it at a convention. And we did that. We honored his wish, and we debuted it at Days of the Dead in Louisville. Mm-hmm. So we did that. And we are especially, with the release that's coming up, and the film has a theatrical, so we're really excited about that. It's coming out this fall. Mm-hmm. On a lot of screens, and we hope that it will expand and even make more screens. But, you know, we at the same time, we are targeting also the convention fans because that was Gunner's wish.
Yeah. Is there a place, is there a website to go to see where it's going to be playing theatrically?
Oh, it'll when they get ready to announce it, they'll have it everywhere. But you can go right on Twitter to, I believe it's Death House Film. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, but you can just go to the film's Facebook, which is Death House. So
they mentioned obviously to play well with for horror fans. But when you're making a movie like Death House, do you have to also have in your mind to make it accessible to fans that aren't necessarily really hardcore horror fans? It might not know every character.
Well, yeah, sure. You know, the big thing we're fighting now, Neil, and I think you see this probably a lot, is that we have we have so much content that is now out there. Mm-hmm. That's one. And number two, you have an entire generation or audience of people that have never even heard of a lot of these people in this film, let alone understand that, you know, Friday the 13th was, you know, the original was 1980. Many of them think both Friday the 13th or even Rob Zombie's Halloween are the start of the franchises. Yeah, and so you're fighting that tidal wave, and you're also fighting a tidal wave of, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Let's put it to you this way. If Halloween or Friday the 13th were made today, they would not probably get theatricals at all. I mean, we're talking about a day and age where, hell, even Rob Zombie or Eli Roth has trouble finding a theatrical on a number of screens. Mm-hmm. So unless you're a superhero movie or a major tentpole franchise like Pirates or Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever, the room isn't there on the screens anymore. Why would a theater give up the screen time and take Wonder Woman off the screen to put, you know, a small film in?
Mm-hmm. It's too bad because, you know, I love watching movies on my computer or the TV, but there's nothing like watching movie on the big screen, how it's meant to be seen.
Absolutely. And I'm a firm believer that there are certain films, not all films, but there are certain films that were meant for the big screen, and it was a mistake to ever release them onto home video. And for example, I think Raiders of the Lost Ark is a shining example of that. Jaws, of course, is a shining example of it. Mm-hmm. But watching Raiders of the Lost Ark, watching it on your mobile phone or a tablet is not the same thing as watching that in a theater on a big screen. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for the Star Wars films.
Yes, yes. We're lucky to have in Boston a couple theaters that show a lot of older movies and midnight movies and smaller independent movies. And it's I love to go and see. We saw Jaws last summer. They show it every summer here. And, you know, even though I've seen it a million times, to see it on the big screen, it's a totally different
experience. An entirely different experience.
Yeah. And someone asked you on Facebook, are all the kills practical?
Yes, I am very happy to say that. All of our kills are practical. The only CGI that we have in the film are for strictly visual, like some like supernatural type effects. Mm-hmm. But that's it. All the kills are practical kills.
Mm-hmm. Is that something important to you, and was that important to Gunner?
Yes. No, it was important to me. Mm-hmm. Gunner, of course, definitely subscribe to old school.
Yeah.
But for me, in making this movie, that's why I hired Sota FX, SOTAFX, under Roy Conyrum. Mm-hmm. I use them because they just do a really great job with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, how close were you with Gunner?
I can't say I was, you know, super tight, super close. We were working partners, I guess, is the best word for it. I wish I could claim he was a friend, but I didn't know him that long. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I met him, my God, I think I met him by February of that year. And then, you know, I met him finally face to face in the late spring. And then he was gone. He was gone by that fall.
Yeah.
But I mean, we got along great. Anybody who knew him and met him at these conventions knows that he was very soft spoken, a very gentle man, mm-hmm. and a very kind person.
Yeah, he
in another universe, he could have been Santa Claus.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I had a few experiences with him at conventions. One of them, because he's from New England too, and we were both delayed like 6 hours our flight because there was some kind of storm up here, and so eventually it was just me and him, and he bought me Chinese food and told me, you know, what to look out for and who to avoid at conventions and all these things, and it was a great experience, something I always remember.
Yep, he was very humble, mm-hmm. you know, and he was very very dry. I loved his sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, when I got to experience it with him, and just a generous person, you know, he was very open. Look, you know, he had the script. He knew that the script needed work. Nobody's bad mouthing his writing. He was the first to admit, he said, I haven't really done anything different here, which is why the project had been gestating up to that point for, my God, almost, you know, 3 years before that. Mm-hmm. 3-4 years before that. I mean, the project's been around over 5 years. And he said that. He said, look, you know, even some of the other horror people said, Gunner, we'll do this for you. We just got to get a better story. So then when he hired this other draft, you know, it went the other direction. Mm-hmm. And it just turned into torture porn. I mean, it was, you know, I don't know about you, Neil, but when I'm being chased by a bunch of psychopaths in an abandoned asylum, uh-huh. I know I like to stop for sex every so often. I think that's important, you know?
Yes, of course. We need that.
So, because the original story was about a documentary film crew at a college go to this old asylum, and it's been abandoned, only they go down into the subterranean part of it to find that it really isn't abandoned. All the whack jobs mm-hmm. were left below, and they've stayed down there, and you know, a lot of gruesome things have happened. So it was more of a 10 Little Indians kind of, you know, mm-hmm. scenario. And Gunner had said, you know, we've seen this before, you know, like we're not really bringing anything new to the table here.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the five evils. Now, mm-hmm. you make each of those like a different type of evil. Like how
that's a great question. No one's ever really asked me that. The answer is, yeah, they all represent a different type of evil, but they have one common thing, and that is they know their importance to the universe. The premise of Death House is definitely taking a swipe at this political correctness that we have these days, this conformity thing where we all should be the same and we should all disagree. We're all free to disagree as long as we disagree on the same things and everybody's offended kind of thing. So it's the belief, there's a belief that the work going on in Death House is we can make people better through science. And the five evils are a reminder to us that that's not the way it works. Mm-hmm. You know, you need good and you need evil. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it's always been, and that's the way the universe was designed. Mm-hmm. As unfortunate as that may be, they're needed. You can't purge badness. You can't purge evil.
Mm-hmm. Now, I obviously don't want you to give away the movie, but mm-hmm. along those lines, are the evil in this movie sort of like gods or the ancient evils?
No. No. And that's another great question. I can say this. I fashion them on the concept of the banality of evil because, and what I mean by that is that was a phrase that was used for a description of the architects of the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. These were not like, you know, movies like to portray the Nazis are always hulking, monstrous, ape-like, mutant type people. And in real life, the architects who designed the gas chambers and the, you know, the system for accounting the dead were very, very common people, very bookwormish kind of people, academics, mm-hmm. People you would never think are evil, just walk in the street. And that's what I wanted out of the five evils. If you saw the five evils outside of their prison garb, they have these restraining suits on, you would never know that they were evil.
Mm-hmm. To me, that's always much scarier because, you know, it's cool to have a big giant monster or something that's obviously evil, but something that could just be hiding in plain sight is much scarier. Like the original Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, think about it. I read a statistic, I don't know if it's true, But, you know, you walk in, you know, let's say you walk the streets of New York or whatever. They say that, I don't know, every so many people you walk by, someone's a killer. Mm-hmm. You've walked by a murderer in your life and you don't even know it. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have gone to high school with one. You know, you could be sitting on a plane with one and nobody knows that. That's mm-hmm. scary.
Mm-hmm. So in your mind, are the evils in this movie, is that different than just like a villain? Because could a villain
just
not be evil or vice versa?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it depends. Everybody's got their envision or their definition of a villain. Mm-hmm. These evils, they have a place in the universe. That's what they're trying to say. Mm-hmm. A villain does not necessarily have that. Mm-hmm. Like somebody who actually saw the film said to me, he goes, you know, the evils actually have a point. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, like somebody to say like, yeah, we know they're evil, but they actually make a point here.
Mm-hmm. I always think that's a good, I always like that in a villain too, who, in their own mind or for whatever reason, what they're doing, in their mind is for right.
Yeah. In their mind, they're kind of the gatekeepers of evil for the universe. They're kind of like Satan's front men is mm-hmm. really what they are.
Mm-hmm. And, who are
like
the
opening of the film,
yeah, sorry.
The opening of the film starts with a quote by Bill Moseley. And mm-hmm. it says, "Who weeps for Satan, the original sinner?" Like, you know, we're always talking God, but you know, Satan was expelled. Mm-hmm. He's punished. He's, you know, lives in eternal damnation. And somebody actually has the temerity to say, well, who cries for him?
Mm-hmm. Bill Moseley, I always think, is such a good actor because he's he can some two of his big roles is Chop Top, and you think he's very small and weaselly. And then when he's Otis, he seems very big and he's scary. And it's neither one. I know he has makeup and Chop Top, but neither one's really because of makeup. It's just him as an actor. Can play a very small, you know, Weasley guy, and also a very big, you know, overbearing guy.
Oh yeah.
You know, just his physicality. Does he play one of the evils?
I can tell you, yes, he plays one of the evils.
All right, very cool. I'm looking forward to that. Who are the heroes in the movie?
Courtney Palm and mm-hmm. Cody Longo. They play two young federal agents that are told that they graduated at the top of their class. They are the best of the best, and they are being given a tour of Death House because they will be working inside of Death House eventually. And they're given a tour when, if I borrow Jurassic Park's terms, the ride breaks down.
Mm-hmm. Did you come up with like backstories for each of the characters in Death House?
Yes.
Now, did you tell that to the actors or did you talk about it with the actors? Or
We worked together with the actors. One interesting scene, which I'm very proud of because, look, you know, in horror movies, of course, you want your eye candy as well, too. You know, you want the good looking people, you know, to mm-hmm. show some skin. And instead of just an abject scene of nudity or sex, the two agents take a shower together. And it's a full, complete shower. And at first it looks like we're just doing it for gratuitous nudity. Uh-huh. But then we notice both actors came up with a brilliant idea. And that is, they said, listen, we have tattoos. And I'm like, okay. And they said, we'd like to incorporate those with our characters because really federal agents aren't really supposed to have tattoos. Mm-hmm. And so we work that in as a backstory together that the tattoos are on their bodies and they don't really know how they got there and they don't know what they mean. And that's part of the overall bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So it's a good scene.
Yeah. Sounds very interesting. When's the movie coming out?
It's coming out in November.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be carried through Regal Theaters.
Very cool. And what's the tone of the movie?
What do you mean? Like, I know what tone is, but Like, what are you looking for?
Is it a serious horror movie? Is it
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering. Yeah, I was going to say, this is not a spoof. This is not a satire. This is not a send-up. This isn't a Scooby-Doo type of, oh, look, there's Sid Haig. Uh-huh. It's not that at all. This is a very serious horror film. And most of all, it's a smart one. We have plenty of blood and gore for those who want that, mm-hmm. and violence. And it really, for the first two-thirds of the film, it's very much an action movie. Mm-hmm. It owes more to Escape from New York than it does, you know, a Friday the 13th type slasher. Mm-hmm. So the tone is very dark, very elevated, but not tongue-in-cheek and nothing silly. Now, with that being said, there are a lot, and I mean a lot, of audio and visual Easter eggs in this movie. Mm-hmm. If you're a real horror fan listening to this podcast right now, mm-hmm. and you know your horror, you're going to have to watch this thing 2-3 times just to catch everything that we've thrown in.
Uh-huh. Was that fun to put in?
Oh, yeah. Especially it was more than fun. It was challenging not to just, you know,
not like
put it out
very
there.
Very obvious.
You know, you have to, yeah. right, you have to, right. It's not obvious. Like, you have to pay attention. And then there is one real good one, but that, all I can tell you is, stick around for the credits.
Oh, nice.
Because, and what I will say is, when you see it, you'll know it. And it's the real thing. Mm-hmm. It's the real one, and it's the original one.
Hmm. Very interesting. I wanted to see it before anyway, but now I'm very interested.
Good.
Yeah. Kane Hodder, obviously the movie without his mask and just being an actor, was that yep. something he was, you know, happy to do?
Very happy to do. And in fact, Kane has seen the film. I'm sure if you get him on the show or you contact him, mm-hmm. he is more than proud of this movie. And he's proud of it, not just for his performance, because the other actors in the film have agreed this is pretty much Kane's movie. Mm-hmm. But Kane is so proud of the other performances as well, because he said, when he called me, he said, look, I've seen it. And there isn't a bad performance in this movie. And he is so proud of it. He said, I will promote this wherever, whenever. I'm excited. This needs to get a theatrical. He is beyond proud.
Yeah. I don't want this to be an offensive question, but was it intimidating at all to direct, you know, so many, you know, icons of horror movies?
No, and I wouldn't take offense to that anyway. Mm-hmm. No, not at all. And the reason why is because they were just the nicest damn people. Mm-hmm. That's why. They just made it so easy to work with them. Very humble people. Very, very nice.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a silly question, but even if it wasn't from the actors, maybe it's from, you know, their people, whatever, was there any like arguments of who gets top billing or where people's
no.
names are on the credits?
No. Good question. But I'm not just saying it. I would tell you if it was, no, they all agreed from the very beginning to have what is called most favored nations status. Mm-hmm. Nobody's on top of anybody in the billing. Cody Longo and Courtney Palm, they get above billing, and all the other horror stars agree with that because they're not really the horror stars. Mm-hmm. So they were generous about that. And everybody otherwise got favored nations billing. And there were no divas. I remember Michael Berryman said it best, and he just said, we're doing this for Gunner. Mm-hmm. That's it. And Tony Todd said that. He goes, look, I'm here for Gunner, man. It's not about me. It's about Gunner.
Mm-hmm. Do you have either something he told you or your own thoughts of why Death House was like such a special project for Gunner?
I never really discussed that with him. I know that he always wanted, and he told me this part, that he had always wanted to make a movie with basically all his buddies. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they wanted to do. Now, Michael Eisenstadt tells me that, you know, his idea was basically to, you know, with the success of the Avengers and things like that, is to basically do this mm-hmm. with horror. And it's not a bad idea, you know? And I know that I read somewhere that Bruce Campbell was going to do this. And, you know, somebody posted on Facebook, they stole Bruce Campbell's idea. No, dude, we did not. And if you're going to accuse Gunnar Hansen of theft, you really don't know your horror. Gunnar had the idea a long time ago, but I'm sure it was not the most original idea. You know, it's just sure. a matter of time, especially with the success of the Expendables with action. You know, look, Mad World did it. They compiled sure. all the comedians at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was just an idea that came to pass and we got it done first.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have to get everyone together to film the movie, or did you film, you know, some of the people's parts at different times?
People's parts at different times. Mm-hmm. We did, you know, we had a Philadelphia shoot, then we had an LA shoot, and Kane was part of both. Sure. Dee Wallace and Barbara Crampton were part of both, but you know, a lot of the celebrities too. Michael Berryman and a bunch of the others, Lindsay Hartley, Vernon Wells, and all of them, they came later. They came to the LA shoot. They were never on site in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Heather Markham here on our Facebook page, I guess she doesn't really have a question. She just says, looks so friggin' awesome. I can't wait to see it. I haven't been this excited in a while. When can I get my blood-filled eye candy? Which you said.
Well, Heather, that's coming real soon. It's coming this fall. And most of all, I just really, you know, hope that audiences love it. You know, I can say this, it's not Lights Out. It's not Get Out. It's not Don't Breathe. It's not The Conjuring. And right now that's what's in. And mm-hmm. if that's what people are expecting, well, you're going to be disappointed, because that's not what it is. If you know your horror and you go to these conventions and you grew up with, you know, Jason and Freddy and all of that stuff, you're going to love this, because we made it with respect to that audience base. Now, to bring in new people, it's got a fresh story, takes in definitely the impact of technology on society. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that, you know, new horror fans watch it and see something in it that they go, wow, I got to watch this again, because I can say it's one of those movies that's not just a one and done. You should watch it a couple times, because there's so much in it.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed on your website, class85.com, you have a list of 101 horror movies. And what's, instead of asking your favorite horror movie, what's your favorite genre of horror, or favorite time of horror movies?
Well, it's hard to say. I love them all for what they are. However, I mean, look, I was an 80s kid. I grew up in the 80s. I saw pretty much everything that there was. I just recently caught again The Deadly Spawn, which I saw at a drive-in in 1983. Uh-huh. So I love that kind of stuff. However, I really enjoyed the 70s, like the late 60s and 70s had some really interesting stuff in horror. And one of my favorites of all time is The Abominable Dr. Fibes with Vincent Price.
Mm-hmm. That's my favorite Price movie.
Go ahead.
I said it's my favorite Vincent Price movie.
Yeah, it's definitely my favorite Vincent Price movie, without doubt. Mm-hmm. It's just such a cool kind of funky stylistic romp. Yeah. And it's really an interesting film too, with really great performances. And it's also an example of how, you know, lightning really can't strike twice, because the sequel, which pretty much had all the same people in it, mm-hmm. and behind the camera, the same director, I believe, it didn't work. You know, the sequel was a big letdown. Mm-hmm. But the original, oh, I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. When did you know you were a horror fan?
Well, I grew up, if you ever see my first film, The Fields, which I did not direct, but The Fields is a true story. And in it, it shows me watching horror movies with my grandmother, the kid who plays me, and Cloris Leachman oh, nice. Played my grandmother. So I'm going to say that I knew I liked horror from watching all the old Universal movies with my grandmother. You know, I by the time I was 8, 9 years old, I knew who Boris Karloff was. I knew Bela Lugosi, Peter Lorre, all of them, Christopher Lee. I knew all of them. I watched them a number of times. Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say, when I was pretty young, by the time I was 7 or 8 years old, then when I was 8, my mother took me to see Jaws in 1975 to the movie theater. And man, that's when I knew it. I walked out and it was like, I want to make movies. That's what I want to do.
So she had no problem with you watching R-rated movies?
Well, they weren't R. I mean,
that's true. I guess
the Universal stuff wasn't R, and Jaws was PG. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, Jaws was basically X-rated for anybody over 30. You know, it was like kids ate it up.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean,
my mom never had any problems, so I was just asking.
Yeah, no, my mom nor my grandparents ever had any problems. I mean, you know, nowadays we live in a day and age where, you know, I'm sure if my mother were around today and doing that, they'd cart her off for therapy and call child protective services. Some do-gooder would do something like that. So, you know,
Did your mom get to see you, finish your movie?
No, no, we finished The Fields in 2009. Right at the end of 2009, we shot it, and then it was edited by 2010, and my mother died in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Back to Death House, and I don't want you to spoil anything, but do you have any particular favorite death scenes in the movie without, you know, giving too much away that we should look forward to?
Yeah, I got a couple, but I can tell you the scene with Kane Hodder and R.A. Mihailov might be my favorite, and where Soda Effects just really outdid themselves.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm a big fan of R.A. Mihailov. He's a good friend of mine. And
he's
a nice man. Yeah,
he's
a great guy.
He's another one. Another Leatherface is just a big teddy bear.
Uh-huh. And you wouldn't think it if you see him. You think that's probably a guy.
No, hey man, he looks like he'd kick your ass six ways to Sunday.
Yeah, and him and Kane together, very funny. It was
you know, there's a funny story about that. You're right. We had to do this stunt, and I said, okay, now, R.A., what I want is Kane is going to do this, but I'm going to have him do this. And he looks at me, goes, no, Kane's going to do it the way Kane wants to do it. Don't worry. I'm ready for it. That's what he said.
That's awesome.
And he was right. So it was very funny.
Uh-huh. And I mentioned your favorite horror movies. Are there any underrated horror movies you think people, you know, should see that maybe not everyone's seen?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many. You know, like, one of my favorites was Ken Wiederhorn's Shockwaves, the zombie film with Peter Cushing. And I know it has its following, but, man, I wish a lot more people, especially with this Walking Dead stuff, people took a look at that because, man, that had such great style, and it was just creepy, and the zombies had such a cool, iconic look to them. And if I'm not mistaken, that's our first time that we actually have Nazi zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Dead Snow doesn't get the credit for that.
Uh-huh.
So then in addition, Let's Scare Jessica to Death is another one. Really underrated. It's very atmospheric, very creepy. People either love it or hate it. It got a small theatrical in 76, then it went right to television, you know, ABC, I think, used to play it all the time. Scared the shit out of me as a kid. But it's kind of interesting on that one because John Hancock was the director, and he was originally hired for Jaws 2.
Mm-hmm.
And they fired him about 6 weeks into the production because the tone of the film was way too dark. And the only footage of John's that exists in Jaws 2 are about 30 seconds when the shark surfaces at night in the harbor. And you just see the fin come up and it slices through the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
But that gives us a hint of a film that I really wish we could have seen. Because I really think Hancock's Jaws 2 probably would have been superior to the one we got.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a shame. Because the story, the novel of Jaws 2 is what they were going by. The screenplay followed that. Or I should say that the novel followed that screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was dark. It was dark and it was nasty. And I wish we could have seen it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen that movie you mentioned before that, Scare Jessica to Death.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Zora Lampert's in it. Uh-huh. I think she's really the only star of note. And then she disappeared for a long time, but showed up in The Exorcist 3. mm-hmm. and as George C. Scott's wife.
Yeah.
But those are two that come to mind when you ask me about underrated horror, just because they were just so stylistic and really moody, you know, like the atmosphere of them, very paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one that I guess I'll mention, many people will call it science fiction and not horror, is the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland and Brooke Adams. That movie still scares me to this day. And the reason why is because it came true. We have become that society where if you don't agree with somebody, they might as well just point the finger and screech at you and call you out. I mean, that's what we've become. Everybody has to fall in line. And I mean, just go on Twitter, you know, and see how it is. And, you know, people just have their opinions. And if you disagree with them, then they flame up and they start campaigns against. It's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it's become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the best endings. I was just wearing my shirt the other day, actually, with that scene on it, with Donald Sutherland pointing and screaming. And that's a movie I always bring up when people are really anti remakes as one of the great remakes.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, it's funny. I was in seventh grade when that came out. And I remember, like, you know, people saying, don't go see it. It's a remake. The original, the black and white's better. No, absolutely not. It is a remake that is superior to the original, because it really got to explore far more than what many read into the black and white one, of the communist undertones, the Red Scare, the witch hunts. This went further. It transcended into a society that was quickly becoming a bunch of sheep and being molded. And we were becoming those pod people, and we are those pod people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what we've become. And that's both liberal and conservative, because you know, the liberals love to say, oh, we're tolerant, and then they call people out and scream at them if they don't agree with them, and they, you know, they riot on campuses and they shut down free speech. And then of course the conservatives have their own brand of, you know what I mean, like,
of course
everybody, of course. And you know what I'm saying, it's like it's something that's across the board. It transcends politics, it transcends ideology, that we've just, you know, and then we believe whatever we see on the television. We, you know, you have social justice warriors that are going to take up a cause. They don't even know the fucking details of anything. They just saw an edited TV show with some music on it, and they think, oh my God, I've got to take up this cause. And then if you actually say, no, you might want to look at some facts, well, then they scream and they flip out and they, you know what I mean? Like, that's, that's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, dude. That's exactly what happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Usually if I see an argument and the person's either saying, you know, all libtards, or they're saying all Republicans, it's immediately like, oh, I don't need to read the rest of this.
Yeah, I stay away from. Look, I'm on Twitter to promote my films. Once in a while, I'll branch out, you know, and I'll say something that might be somewhat political, but I avoid all that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm there to promote movies, talk movies. Every once in a while, you comment on the stupid stuff of society. But, you know, I think if you look at my timeline, it's like 90-95% just all entertainment.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's cool because it's something that can bring people together from all different walks of life. The love of
and it does sometimes. It, like, look at those Jaws nitwits. I call them the Jaws twits. You know, and they don't break character. And then, but then sometimes they will, and they're just nice. You know, like they say, hey, you know, thanks a lot for doing this, or. And that's just really nice, you know, like, and it's a shame that we have this massive technology these days and most of it's spent on being mean to one another. I like John Squires, the writer for Bloody Disgusting. Mm-hmm. I like him a lot. Never met him, but we converse. We're Twitter pals, I guess you could say. But, you know, he's always trying to find the positive in something, and that's great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said a couple nights ago when I responded, he said, I wonder why Tarantino doesn't have a Twitter account, you know, so we could, you know, just hear him, you know, tweet about something, you know what I mean? Like, you know, some kind of musing or rumbling that he has. And I wrote back, probably because he's smarter than the rest of us and knows that if he gets an account, that basically he'll be bombarded by people calling him a hack and a shitty filmmaker.
Yeah.
And so he's just avoiding that. you know,
right.
Because there's, I mean, you know, there's so many experts. It's like I rail all the time about it. Like, you know, the so-called trailer reviewers, you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is a trailer reviewer? It's so stupid, you know? Wouldn't it be funny? I hope it isn't, but wouldn't it be funny if it really sucks? Like the best you saw was in that trailer. Cause right. There are all these boners out there screaming, "Oh, it's the greatest thing ever." And I really do enjoy the trailer. And I look, they've got my money. I will be plunking down my $10 to go see it in September. And I will gladly, because I'm excited to actually go see a movie. But my point is, just imagine if it was like that, you know, and there they are raving. And it's the same way. Like, you know, even when Death House trailer came out, "Oh, this looks awful. It looks cheap. It looks like they shot it with nothing." Well, I guess if the Alexa Pro is a cheap camera, yeah, then I guess we shot a cheap movie. You know, by people who don't make movies. They they don't know anything about it. They think they do, but they don't. And that's the problem. You know, people pontificating on this. And you see it, like, even the Death Wish trailer, which I guess dropped today.
Yeah.
And, you know, right away, all the upper middle class white people are offended, you know. "Oh, just what we need in a day and age of racial tension." Yeah, but what are you doing here? It sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. It's a movie. And if you don't like it, don't watch it. And most of all, don't tweet about it, because you're only drawing more attention to it.
Yeah, I thought the trailer actually looked good. I watched it early before we did the interview.
You know, look, I mean, let's face it. The original is, it's not like the original is some, you know, Gone with the Wind classic.
I thought the exact same thing.
You know what I mean?
I saw people saying, Bruce Willis will never be the actor that,
Charles Bronson.
Charles Bronson. And I didn't want to say anything, because nothing against Charles Bronson, but I was just thinking, I mean, come on, he's not Marlon Brando or something.
No, and he didn't aspire to be.
Right.
You know, so let's not start elevating the first one. It was a good pulp, you know, action movie, and it hit a tone at the time. Crime was rampant at the time. It seemed like the, you know, the courts were finding in favor of the criminals instead of the victims, and it touched a nerve. And you know what? Yeah, it touches a nerve now. That's why they're doing it. You know, it touches a nerve. And so right away, but now see, we didn't have the internet 40 years ago. So now everybody who thinks they have a voice and they think they're a film expert, or, you know, they're an expert on morality and society, they all chime in. Well, you know what? What you don't understand is you're driving people to it. The same thing with this Confederate show. Well, what are you talking about? All these quote unquote tolerant people. Just so you know, liberals made the movie, okay? They made the Confederate movie, right? Or the series, whatever it's going to be. Mm-hmm. It's made by HBO, one of the most liberal cable programmers out there. You know, and then here they are, shut it down. It should be banned. Well, that's fascism. That's totalitarianism. Yeah. You don't like
sure
it? Don't watch it.
Yeah. I don't like that on any side. I mean, exactly. If you don't like something, no one's forcing you to watch it.
Turn it off. Don't talk about it. And that's it. You know, like somebody tweeted a couple days ago, and I could understand it was some hunting show. And they're saying, "Oh, boycott the show." It's like, no, then write the advertisers. You know, I mean, if it's a show glorifying the hunting of elephants, which right now they can't afford one to drop dead naturally, let alone somebody poaching one. Well, you know what I mean? Then write the advertisers, start a campaign against the average. You're not going to shut the show down.
Yeah, but if the money's not there, then the show will be shut
right.
down.
Right. How do you think they got rid of Bill O'Reilly?
Right.
You know, the advertisers left.
How can people follow Death House?
Well, they can go on Twitter. It's Death House Film, I believe, Death House Movie on there. It's on Facebook, and I believe we have an Instagram as well, too.
Very cool. And how can they follow you so they can get they
I'm
can
Harrison Smith 85 on Twitter.
You gotta get on the Jaws tweets.
They're great.
And do you think Death House lives up to the original, not necessarily premise, but just like the heart of what Gunnar wanted to make?
I can say firmly yes. And the reason why is we made it with Gunnar's blessing, He approved of the final script, and most of all, we made it with respect to the horror genre audience. We did not make a stupid film. And let me tell you something, Neil. We could have easily made a stupid movie. Uh-huh. We could have made just a dumb movie that was paint by numbers and thrown out a bunch of cameos like, oh, there's Tony Todd. Oh, there's Tony Moran. Oh, there's, you know, Sid Haig. Boom. There you go. There are your cameos. Give me your money. Mm-hmm. We didn't do that.
No, I'm happy to hear that because I'll be on. I don't want to say the name of a movie, but I have seen a movie where it was several horror icons and it was a very dumb movie. And it was very disappointing.
Yeah. You know, look, it's not going to be everybody's favorite movie. That's fine. We know that. But we made a good movie. Mm-hmm. Look, Jaws, there are people that don't like Jaws. There are people that don't like Nightmare on Elm Street. There are people that hate the original Halloween. That's the way it works. Mm-hmm. And you're perfect. It's perfectly within your right to dislike it. My only point is, with so much content that is out there now, and we have this gigantic digital megaphone that anybody can just grab and say what they want, really know your stuff before you just start criticizing. You know, like, understand movies. Like, for, I'll give you one example. I wrote a piece on my cinema blog. I have a series of articles called Cinema, C-Y-N-E-M-A, and they're not movie reviews. It's about the process of cynicism in filmmaking and why it makes bad movies. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, you know, a lot of movies have been robbed of their joy through cynical filmmaking. So anyway, I wrote a piece on Robin Williams' Popeye. Mm-hmm. And I put on there that it is my opinion, and I supported it through data, why I believe that it is Williams' best movie. And I know people right away, whoa. What about, you know, this, and what about Awakenings, and, you know, all this other stuff? No, there's a reason why. And I put it in there because it is true art with what Robert Altman did, what Williams did, Harry Nilsson did. Anyway, I have a friend who said, well, I read your article. And so my husband and I, we watched it, and it is not his funniest movie. And I said, well, number one, you're wrong. It is, I never said it was his funniest movie. Mm-hmm. I said it's his best. And the reason why is, again, because it utilizes all of his talents so well. And she goes, well, I just didn't see it. Well, here's the thing. All this woman does is watch Disney films, Neil. Mm-hmm. She doesn't watch anything else. So you don't really have a litmus test here at all. You have nothing to compare it to. You've seen nothing else. She's never seen The Godfather. She's never seen anything other than Disney films her whole life. So my reply was, when you watch something more than a Disney movie, you can get back to me. But otherwise, your opinion doesn't mean shit to me. Uh-huh. So I don't really care what you think.
Uh-huh. Where is the blog?
It's hosted by horrorfuel.com.
Mm-hmm. I know the website. Free. Movie director here in Boston, Mike O.D., wants to know, what focal length did you use on the film?
That is a great question that I wish my DP, Matt Clammer, was on for right. to answer. Uh-huh. So I cannot answer that accurately.
All right.
But I can tell you, I mean, you wait till you just see the look of this film. I'm just thrilled with it.
Mm-hmm. And real quick about, you mentioned people who review trailers. When you put together the trailer for Death House, you know, how much do you want to put in so people want to go see it? But at the same time, you want to keep stuff out because you want it to be a surprise and not you know, give away the whole idea of the movie, well, the whole plot of the movie.
Well, we had to be real careful. I mean, number one, like you say, you don't want to give away too much. You don't want to give away all the Easter eggs and surprises. Mm-hmm. We have some surprise cameos in there that we didn't even bill. So, and I can say this, we didn't put all the best parts in the trailer. So if there are people that have seen the trailer and go, oh my God, this is awesome, you just wait. Because we didn't even put all the great things in. Mm-hmm. Those are surprises. So we had to balance it out. And like I said, we followed the Jurassic Park model. And that is, here's the park. It's a technical, you know, technological thing here. And then it breaks down and the monsters get out. That's what
Hello.
For. So we can show it's an intelligent film. Yep, I'm here.
Yeah.
Yep, Neil.
Yeah, yeah. You just cut out just for a second. We're good.
Okay. So, you know, by modeling it on the Jurassic Park formula, I think we conveyed everything that we have here. We have two characters that need to escape, and there's something in the bottom of this prison that may be their only way out.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I'm really looking forward to it. I know many people are as well, and I really appreciate you coming on tonight to talk about Death House.
Well, I appreciate the invite and have me on anytime. And definitely. Thanks again for just letting me talk about Death House.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had many people on talking about Death House. They all seem very excited, and I'm sure we'll have more people on.
Good. Hopefully afterwards you'll be able to give it a very positive review. I'm hoping you really enjoy it.
Yeah, I do too. Which I say I do too, which should be anyone's, like any movie they see they want to enjoy. But like you said, I do think there are people that go in hoping they don't like movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's what sells these days, and that's cynical. Uh-huh. You know, you're supposed to hate everything. That's what it is. Uh-huh. You know? Uh-huh. Imagine a movie site that actually say, well, I'm going to find the good in something. Like, for example, I'm not a fan. I am a fan, but I feel that The Shining is completely an overrated horror film. Mm-hmm. And what buoys me in that is I know Stephen King feels the same way. Uh-huh. However, it is a beautiful motion picture. It is extremely well crafted. There are some completely eerie and creepy scenes in it. Mm-hmm. And the score alone is terrific, but it really succeeded. I think its biggest triumph is it really made a villain out of that hotel. I mean, that hotel is a monster in that movie. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not really like the book at all. Mm-hmm. And I find it often dull. And I thought Jack Nicholson's performance, although without Jack, you don't really have anything in the movie. I always say without Jack, you got Jack in The Shining. Mm-hmm. And but it doesn't mean I hate it. It doesn't mean I said it's a terrible film. But right away, people go, oh, what are you talking about? Shining's awesome. You hate that movie? I never said that. See, I'm actually using, you know, critical thinking here to tell you my opinion of it, which really doesn't matter. The movie made money. It's considered a classic and people enjoy it. So who cares what I think? Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, when I am asked, that's what I say. Mm-hmm. I don't by any means think it's a bad film. I mean, it's Stanley Kubrick. How can it be bad? Mm-hmm. You know, but now we have this black and white where if you just even disagree with, oh, you must hate it. You said you hated it. No. Uh-huh. I'm just maybe because you didn't like my answer, you're just a little upset. Mm-hmm. However, it's far from a bad motion picture. It's an exquisite motion picture, especially from a production value standpoint. It is absolutely beautiful and breathtaking to watch, especially on a big screen or a widescreen television. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that does get my nerves though, about like either you hate it or you love it. Because there's a middle ground. I mean, you could not necessarily like something. It doesn't mean you absolutely hate it. Or even if you like something,
that's why I enjoy Scott Weinberg. You know, mm-hmm. he loves movies, and he doesn't consider himself a critic. And he finds, like, you know, like most people hate something. He's like, yeah, all right, maybe this wasn't good, but there's a lot of good in this. Because he's somebody who actually loves film. He understands film. He's writing film. He gets it.
My opinion on The Shining, I think people who were really familiar with the book before they saw the movie tend not to like the movie. And most of the people who really liked the movie didn't read the book till either after or never read the book.
I think that would be a fair assessment. I read the book before I saw the movie. Mm-hmm. However, I like the movie. My problem is when people go, it's one of the top five most terrifying motion pictures. I can't support that. I'm like, I would fall asleep first before I got scared. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like the dialogue is all in slow motion. Everybody moves in slow motion. It just seems like, oh, it's like The Keep. Do you ever see The Keep?
Yes.
You know, it's a beautiful looking film, but my God, it moves a mile every 5 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. The writer, I forget the name right now, but he's not a fan at all of the film.
Wasn't it Kuntz who wrote it?
No, it's
I don't even know.
We've actually had him on the show, so if you're really bad, then I can't remember. F. Paul Wilson.
F. Paul Wilson. Yeah. Now, was he the writer of the book or the screenplay?
The writer of the book. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, now I heard that they totally massacred the book. Oh, I never read the book.
The book's great.
But when I recommend it. Yeah, when I watched it, I saw it in theaters, man. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it in theaters, I was a kid, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going to be scary. You got a monster in the castle. Yeah. And nope. It's just – but stylistically, it's beautiful. Uh-huh. You know? It's not a bad film if you want to – like Jaws the Revenge is bad because they had no desire to make a good movie. And that movie is what inspired my cinema articles. Mm-hmm. Because there was no intention to make a good movie with Jaws the Revenge, Neil. They said, you know, like, look, this was a way to write off an expense, get a vacation in the Bahamas. They didn't even have a script when they sent the sharks to the Bahamas. They didn't even have a script. They didn't even know what they were doing.
Uh-huh. Well, I always loved that the shark follows the plane.
Oh, and it roars and it's psychic and oh my God. Like, and you can tell they never even pitched that. You know what I mean? Like, how do you sit as part of a creative board and somebody says, okay, we're going to pitch you the plot for Jaws 4. We bring back Ellen Brody. We can't get Chief Brody. Roy Scheider told us to go screw ourselves. He's not touching this franchise ever again. However, Mrs. Brody is being hunted by the shark. The shark is psychic. Right there, I would have looked at somebody and said, you're fired. You will never work in film again. Get out of my boardroom.
Now I want to go watch it again. Not really.
Not. Have a couple drinks or smoke one.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think I've only seen The Revenge once. No, that was enough. But
I saw it in theaters. Mm-hmm. So I was dumb enough to fork over my money, and I saw the original ending where they spear it in the head. Then I saw it again on video where it inexplicably explodes at the end, and I don't know why.
Well, why not, I guess. At that
why point. Not?
You're right.
Right. We already have a shark that roars like Spot from the Munsters under the steps, so.
It might as well explode. Exactly.
Right. Might as well just make him blow up.
Awesome. Well. It's been awesome talking to you, and I definitely will have you back on.
Thank you, Neil. It was a real pleasure talking to you, too, and hope your audience had a good time. And most of all, I'm thankful for all the support for Death House, and my fingers are crossed that everybody's going to enjoy it when it comes out.
Very cool. All right. We'll talk to you very soon.
Yes, you will. Thanks again for asking me.
Yep. Anytime. Thank you for doing it.
Take care, Neil. Good night.
Night.
Hey, you. You're listening to YouWithoutYourHead.com, and this is Michael Berryman. Don't touch that dial.